It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Oh, we're going to have fun today. Kevin Marks is here. Matt Cutts is here from Google. And Jeff Jarvis, he's live from the Facebook F8 conference. Well, not exactly. He's live from the lunch tent. But we'll have the latest from F8 VR, robots, and a little Louis C.K. thrown in just to spice things up. It's all next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 348, recorded Wednesday, April 13th, 2016. It's bots all the way down. This Week in Google is brought to you by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover, you know, I've been thinking about this. I really should rename this show because it isn't, as anybody who listens, about just about Google. I think it really should be This Week in the Cloud. Or I was thinking
this
maybe something.
Anything we damn well want.
That's really the truth. There's Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at CUNY, the City University of New York. He is in San Francisco right now at the Fort Mason Center at F8, right?
Yes, I am. I'm sitting on the floor by an access point outside the main Herbst Auditorium so I can get connectivity without wind. So people are going to walk by thinking this is pretty strange, but I'm just sitting here doing anything for the good of Twig.
That's pretty funny. I think that should be our motto. Without wind. What is it? Audio without wind.
Hot air, but no wind.
Yeah, right. Hey, we actually have an amazing panel because we weren't sure whether we would get you or not. So we brought in the big guns. I hope you don't mind. Matt Cutts is also here, Googler himself, one of the early Googlers. Yay, Matt. Love Matt.
Good to see everybody.
Great to see you. And as if that weren't enough, so is Kevin Marks.
Yay!
Another a former Googler, former Appler, former BBCer, former British telecommer. He's former many things. And go ahead, give him a high five there.
High five.
High five, Kevin, to your right.
Oh, no. High five either way. There, yeah. Yes. All right.
And they're like all together, the gang. We brought the gang all together for this. How's F8 been, Jeff? Has it been fun? I suspect we're going to be talking a lot about F8 today. Oh, poor Jeff. Poor Jeff. Oh. See, what's good about Jeff, but who is that? Oh, that was F8. Okay. What's good about Jeff is he really believes in dog food and Google products, so he will not buy a laptop. He insists on using a Chromebook, and now he's using a Pixel C, right?
Yeah, I am. Well, so this way I can do Skype. I have my laptop in the hotel room, but it will do Hangout.
This is fine. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying.
Oh, yes, you are. But that's
you're
okay.
Dog fooding. and good on you, my friend. So what did you think of Zucks? We did not see the keynote. We did not broadcast the keynote today, but we watched and broadcast the keynote yesterday. What did you think?
I think it was pretty amazing because he came out and said, we're going to do something different. We're going to talk about a 10-year plan for Facebook about connectivity and access and connectivity, artificial intelligence, and VR, AR. And so he took through a roadmap there. And I think it was also very important that he made a political statement, too, saying that you can't progress in the world by building walls. You do it by building bridges. And that Facebook believes in connecting people and that good comes from connecting people. And that's what this company is about.
Yeah, that kind of stunned me. I was surprised that he was so political. So now it's, you know, that the scorecard is Tim Cook and Mark Zuckerberg both stepping up and being very political in their keynotes.
Yes. And I think in this case, you know, in Cook's case, it was about an issue that affects the company directly. In Zuckerberg's, it was about a philosophy that says that we're trying to connect the world, and the world is getting more disjointed by this kind of talk.
How reasonable is it, though, for Facebook, which is not yet 10 years old, to talk about its 10-year roadmap?
That's like a 15-year-old saying, when I'm 40, I'm going to be working in the NBA.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. But he does have a large strategic view where, I mean, he's not giving up. India be damned. He's not giving up on the dream of connecting the world. They put up a map of showing where the population lives versus connectivity. This is clearly where they see huge opportunity.
Yeah.
AI, that's what the news feed does, right? It gives us what it thinks we want based on knowing us. And VR, AR is all about going from discovery to immersion, as they said. So that was all very interesting. And then they did a whole separate track of things yesterday just for media, which was also interesting, around live, around VR, around instant articles. And they care about media and they care about content. So I'm really glad I came. It's really interesting.
One of the things Mark talked about is why they have deconstructed the Blue app. I mean, it was, and in fact, it even shows on this roadmap, you know, the big Blue app, the Facebook app, was the heart and soul of Facebook until recently. And then remember, they acquired WhatsApp, they acquired Instagram, they split off Messenger. And I think it's for the first time he kind of, to me, succinctly explained, you know, there's many reasons you might say that you did this. You know, one is, of course, to occupy more home screen real estate. The other is to get notifications and more of them. But I think he described it well when he said there's different ways people share. They share individually, hence the messaging apps. They share to family and friends. That would be for Facebook. And then they share to socially, when that would be Instagram. And that kind of all makes – he mentioned Facebook groups, which I think half of people who use Facebook don't even know they have groups.
Yeah.
But it showed that he's thinking a little bit about the different slices of the user base.
Well, it's not just the user base. It's also the use cases.
Right.
The lesson that I think that Zuckerberg gave us in media when it comes to breaking up the Big Blue app was that we still try to get people to come to one destination that's going to do everything for everybody. That is the mass media way to treat the world. And Zuckerberg recognizes not only that you're an individual, but also that within the day, you have different uses and different needs for connectivity and information and entertainment.
What? Let's talk. There's so much to talk about here. Let me start with bots, with messaging. And I want to make sure Matt and Kevin have something
yes.
to talk about, too. But
we can talk about those.
Well, let's talk about it, Kevin. What is Facebook is better positioned than anybody to take advantage of messaging, the messaging platform, yes?
Maybe. I mean, the thing is, they've already got two big messaging apps.
And almost a billion users for each.
Yes. I mean, the other big ones, the other people who have lots of users are Google and Apple. And then there's the various Asian messaging apps that already exist and already doing this. And that's the template that they're all looking at. Part of this is the app bubble is over. The people aren't installing apps. They're not making money from apps. And a big chunk of Facebook's revenue was from selling ads for apps. So that they've been seeing that vanish for a while. So they're looking for a new platform that they can encourage people to build stuff on. And Facebook has the ability to direct people's attention. That's something they're good at. They have control over the streams. And so they can feed people to that for a while to make that something that people are paying attention to.
Is this driven by people's needs or driven by businesses' needs? Is this driven by what Facebook wants or Amazon or Google or Apple? Or is it driven by what users are looking for? Is this is how users use it now, right?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I think it's driven by them wanting a new conduit and a new place to encourage people to interact. Part of it is that users interact with notifications, and the notifications have taken over from the apps as the sort of primary interface to your phone, and the messaging is the notifications that you don't turn off because you may get messages from people. So somebody called it the last unpolluted part of our phones, which was, I think, a very good way of phrasing it. Now they're busy coming along to pollute it and fill it with commercial messages.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, it wasn't very compelling to look at 1-800-Flowers and ordering flowers in a messaging app. That was not particularly compelling. It was not something I would want to do particularly.
No, but imagine if you talk to your phone and you just want to say, send flowers to Mark Zuckerberg, which, by the way, Danny Sullivan did. It was a brilliant maneuver.
Oh, that's funny.
He wanted to test it out. So he sent flowers to Mark Zuckerberg, and then he said, oh, my wife's not happy. So he sent flowers to his wife. I saw Danny just a few minutes ago, and he said that Zuck sent him immediately said thank you for the flowers.
Oh, he knew.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's very touching.
I don't think messaging per se. I mean, you know, basically all messaging apps do right now is cut up content and feed it to you in spoonfuls. That's no use. But if you imagine conversation as a platform, and if you imagine truly agents who are going to go out and get stuff for you and come back and alert you when it really is worth an alert, then I start to get happy about it.
I followed CNN, you know, I followed a couple of bots just to see. And it isn't a really good use for news. We saw the Quartz app, which was basically the same interface. What's interesting is that the Facebook platform does allow them to do a carousel within Messenger. So I actually get the stories, you know, kind of scrolling horizontally, you know, which is interesting. And then there's buttons on every one so I can read the story, get a summary, ask CNN. And I presume that alerts will come through this way. I don't know if this is better than an app from the point of view of the user. I'll tell you one thing from the point of view of the user. I would much rather talk to a phone representative than have to interact with a company in messaging. That's going to be painful.
Do you think there's an age difference?
Go ahead. Let Matt weigh in here.
Well, I'm just curious if there's an age difference, because I'm kind of with you, Leo. I'm like, this sounds like my worst nightmare to have to talk to companies on a chat system, and an automated, you know, AI chat system doesn't sound all that much better. But I'm wondering if people who are, you know, a little younger might feel more comfortable having those sorts of conversations. Maybe I'm the cranky old man, or we're the cranky old men. I don't know.
Well, it does recognize that younger people are much more comfortable interacting with their phone than a tablet or a computer. I mean, that's really where they live. They're probably more facile than you and I are on the keyboard. But I don't – I mean, remember, young people aren't even using Facebook very much. They're using Snapchat. And so this is going to be a tough one for Facebook, because while they are dominant, for instance, I think Amazon's Echo is a much better platform for ordering flowers than a text-based chat.
Well, okay, I'm going to push back on that one, I think. Because the problem with Echo is that it is just voice. It doesn't have any way of showing you an image. So you can say, I'd like to order some flowers, and it'll say, okay, order you some flowers, but you don't actually get to see what the flowers look like. Whereas, so you're kind of, it's like, you know, an IVR. It's like phoning 1-800-Flowers, and it's like, I'd like some flowers. What have you got, you know? Whereas the point about the chat thing is they can put up other UI, like you were showing with your carousel. Right. So you can say... and there's a good post by Stephen Wolfram about this, where he says, you know, the difference between a conversation with a human and a conversation with a computer is that the computer can give you a user interface that you can then interact with. So you can ask, you know, and obviously he's talking about the stuff he's built with Wolfram, Wolfram Alpha. But
Alpha is an interactive environment like that?
Sponsored. Yeah, so Alpha, you can talk to it, and then it gives you can say, you know, what's the population of the U.S. over the last 50 years, and it'll give you a graph back and stuff like that.
I would love to have a Wolfram Alpha chatbot.
Right, and it's, you know, that's basically something, you know, it's not that good at understanding speech, but his take is basically we're building a command language that we'll teach you how to talk to it, and it'll respond to you in that way, in the same way you do with Siri or Google Now at the moment. You know there's a set of commands in there you can give it. And the challenge with these chat UIs is working out, you know, knowing what the command is for the bot, or having something at the other end that's good enough to map through from what you typed in into the subset of things it can do.
We have to acknowledge that it's very early days. So just as in the early days of the web and of apps, we're going to see a lot of failed experiments as we kind of learn what the medium needs and wants.
Well, it's not really early days. We've had these chatbots for 30 years, you know.
Well, we had Eliza.
It's you know, if you think about the way we use them in IRC or in places like that. No, but, you know, I've Indie Webcam IRC channel has a bot in it called Loki that Aaron wrote. And it'll respond to you. It'll let you set timers.
Oh yeah, people who use IRC have had experience with this, but that's a tiny sliver of the population. Most people have never experienced anything like this.
Yeah, that's true.
What about Slack? Well, in fact, Slack's an interesting counterexample, because Slack, everybody loved Slack at first, but as you add bots and connectivity to Slack as more and more people use it, suddenly yeah. it's as annoying as your inbox. It's not a replacement for email. It's as bad as it's like email without the controls. So what's also going to be extremely important is control for end user control.
Well, and in the same way that if you go ahead, Jeff.
No, no, you go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, in the same way that if you like something on a company on Facebook, then you're kind of like joining their mailing list. It
right.
seems like if you follow a chatbot, you're likely to get notifications from them at all times when you don't want. And I think that's bad. I think what's really going to be annoying is bad AI, because even, you know, so I've got an Alexa and I like it, but the idea that you have to tell it which skills you want it to know, as opposed to sort of automatically figuring out,
right.
here's what I want to do and going to the right service provider. Like if Amazon hasn't figured that out yet, then most, you know, individual companies are going to write really bad bots that are really brittle. And then you're just going to feel your blood pressure rising as you're trying to take your Internet of Things and get your blood pressure. You won't know the exact right way to ask for it. And
it is an opportunity, though, for somebody. We talked about Sam Lessons Finn last week.
Right.
Sam, who did the timeline on Facebook and then left and is now has a startup, FinFIN.com, which is an artificial intelligence, which I haven't been able to get in the beta. Maybe you guys have. You can use on Alexa, but you can use it in other ways. Didn't you say it's like $150 a month?
Yes, a month.
So maybe that's a non-starter, but... if you can't figure out how to make money with a chatbot, a free chatbot, I don't think you're thinking very hard. I mean, seriously, this is a way to coin money.
Benedict Evans said today, you know, he's so smart from Andreessen Horowitz, said that you know, he thinks bots are ridiculous because they're basically a really bad way to do a web page, a piece at a time. But he thinks that bots are good versus email. I think that bots are nothing until they are true agents.
Hey, it's all going to come down to good AI, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's hard, and that's rare, and there's going to be, like, at Y Combinator demo days, there were so many chatbot companies, and, you know, it just feels like we're back in the 90s. We've got chatbots and, you know, VR, and okay, I was there the first time and it wasn't that great, you know, and I'm hoping it's better this time around. But the idea that everybody's going to magically really enjoy talking, it is. It's very much like an interactive voice response system, like you're on voicemail, except you're with a company that can keep talking to you over and over. I mean, we'll see. We'll see. But I'm a little skeptical.
Right. I mean, it's like, you know, we all saw the Knowledge Navigator video in 1987, or whatever it was, which was John Sculley's vision for the future of computing. And that was the guy at the desk talking to his
Knowledge Navigator,
annoying his colleagues at the last minute. You know, if you actually watch that back, we built chunks of that stuff. But it's still a bit fishy. You know, it's like that bot is rather smarter than any of the bots we've actually been able to build and any that exist. And in some ways, the closest thing has been when if you like the OK Google thing, where you say that and ask a question, and it will filter through the world and give you something back. But that's trying to do a very broad domain. And there's obviously you can do things in a narrow domain, but then effectively you're learning a command language. You're basically learning a set of commands that interact with the thing, and so you're back to command line interfaces again.
Here's the Knowledge Navigator, the Scully-era Apple Knowledge Navigator, which is an AI in a book in a bow tie. I'm sorry about the quality, but it's from a VHS tape, I think. And it is extraordinarily annoying. I mean, it's just...
the Amazon rainforest.
Right.
But it's like a human assistant.
Lecture notes from last semester.
We're way far off from this. And this was 1987. I mean, this was 20 years ago. No, 30 years ago.
30 years ago. But this is the point. This is the vision of the future as given by a Pepsi exec who is used to having a secretary. That's kind of what a lot of these things are. It's like, oh, I'm used to being this like self-important guy who shouts at people and gets stuff done, and I want the computer to understand that.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe we can make things that do a bit of that, but it's missing all the actual work that the people who are executive assistants actually do, which is model the world for the boss and shield them from it and let things through selectively. And that's actually a very hard thing to do artificially, because it relies on, you know, emotional knowledge and understanding, which is the thing that we can't model. So I'm skeptical in that way.
One of the things that struck me, Jeff, about Mark's remarks is that in some ways, I think he didn't understand the optics. I've seen Google do the same thing. I seemed a little tone deaf when he showed off, for instance, his drone, his UAV that looked like a stealth bomber and was called a killer. It seemed like he didn't. I did immediately, and I think the rest of the world might be a little bit afraid of Mark. And their 10-year vision did sound a little bit like something out of Skynet with AIs and drones and virtual reality helmets. I think that a normal person, of course, normal people aren't watching F8. This is for developers and people like us.
True.
But I wonder how normal people.
The world. Yeah, I think that's a point. I said on the show a couple of years ago that Google thinks the world thinks Google is Godzilla and Google thinks it's Snuffleupagus. and I think the same is true of Facebook, that, who could be against connecting people? Who could be against bringing people more knowledge? Who could be against this? Well, India was, others could be. So it is the optimism. It is the fundamental, essential optimism of this part of the world. Yeah. And that conflicts with the nerves of others.
So 30 years ago, we had the Pepsi executive in his isolated, corner office with a personal assistant he would yell through the door at. Today, we have the guy in the gray T-shirt who is in a different kind of bubble, but just in some ways just as much of a bubble. I don't think Mark Zuckerberg is necessarily any more in touch. This was scary. This drone, this is not what people want. This is the eye in the sky watching. It's just like Mark marching down the aisle at Mobile World Congress while people are, obliviously wearing headsets. I think maybe it's just me. Matt, Google's had to deal with this too, this perception. Google's in some ways backed down. I think the sale of Boston Dynamics to some degree must have to do with the fact that these are scary robot dogs and probably better not for Google to be developing them.
I don't know about the on Boston Dynamics, but have you seen the Shaft robot video?
Yes.
It's like a much cuter robot.
Isn't that interesting? Yes.
That robot would hardly kill me at all. Yeah. He looks very friendly. So.
Yes. I thought that was interesting. That's a Google, that was their DARPA winning robot. Yeah.
Well, I think Shaft was Japanese, but in the rundown, there's actually a video of the Shaft robot.
Why did I think Google owned the Shaft robot? Maybe I misunderstood.
I think they do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think they do.
You know, but I for some reason I thought that it was...
Maybe developed in Japan. I mean, that doesn't mean Google can't.
Yeah, the keynote was in Tokyo. That's what maybe that's what the connection was.
Right. Let me find the video so we can show it.
Yeah, it's a much friendlier looking robot.
Nice robot. Nothing wrong. Nothing wrong with nice robots.
Put some felt on him and make him look furry.
He needs a nice Alcantara shell. I can't find it in here.
It's under Alphabet.
There you go. I'm looking under Google. My mistake. Alphabet owns it. See, this must be hard for you too. You've been there for a long time.
I usually just say Google all the time, and people don't worry about it
much. People know what you're talking about. Here is so it's a bipedal, very kind of cute bipedal robot
carrying a bomb, but never mind.
Well, this is a little creepy too. I mean, it's not perfectly uncreepy
compared to the robot dogs.
How do you manage the creepy line? What do you expect Facebook and Google to do with new technologies? The technology itself is what might disturb people. Do you not show it?
No. I'll tell you how they do it in movies. They don't try to make them bipedal. The more you make it look like a human, the creepier it is. So I really don't understand this kind of motivation to make robots human-like. I understand that some robots, a rescue robot, needs to be able to go through a door and go upstairs and stuff like that. But this robot's bringing you food. I don't know.
But the point is that, we built the world around us. So, there are staircases and things that are hard to deal with if you've got wheels. And I suppose you could just fly it in with a drone, but that's creepy in a different way.
The hotel robot's not creepy, right?
Right.
But it goes in elevators, and it just is like a little post office box, a little mailbox.
Well, they have those in hospitals. I mean, those go whizzing around hospitals delivering pills to people.
Yeah,
and they look like mailboxes, and they use elevators. And
I think there's a reason they look like that. They're not bipedal, and they don't have faces and go, "Here are your pills, sir." That would not be.
I will watch you for compliance.
Yes, you must take it. That's in humans, right? Isn't that in humans? I love that. In humans, they have these android nurses, and they exactly say, "You've not been taking your pills, you naughty boy."
Nurse Ratchet robot, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like a Nurse Ratchet robot. What else? Let's see. Virtual reality, the Oculus Rift. Of course, Facebook owns Oculus Rift, but Oculus is going to see some tough competition. The Vive is coming out right now. People are saying in many ways it's better. It at least has the paddles that the Oculus Rift is delayed on. The Move, PlayStation VR is going to be coming out soon, too. I feel like, though, what's interesting to me on this, both on messaging and on VR, is how seemingly far behind Google and Apple are on this.
Yes, that's why I find that the catch-up games that are going on here in various areas are interesting to me, and that's one.
Yeah.
I think live video is Google's also behind on and is going to catch up.
Google should own that. I mean, Google really, they had the jump camera that's basically what Mark has copied a year ago.
But his has 17 cameras, not 16.
One better. It's one more. It's better.
It's one louder.
It's one more. That's better, right? It's just one better.
So it is interesting to me that thinking about Google, I recently burned like 4 or 5 nights watching the premium shows that YouTube Red has. So I think there was something where Google or YouTube wanted to, you know, spend some resources getting a good subscription product.
Right.
And so you subscribe to YouTube Red, and I watch Scare PewDiePie and Frank Academy, and it's actually pretty entertaining. I like more than I expected.
My kids watching Scare PewDiePie. I didn't expect him to. I thought my initial reaction is, oh, this is old media trying to imagine what young kids want to watch. It's the Fred Figglesworth model. You know, he was a huge YouTube star, but the minute he was on Nickelodeon making movies, it was like,
yeah. But there's actually a little bit of a story arc. Like they play a trick on PewDiePie.
Yeah.
It plays out all through the season.
No, it's funny. Yeah.
So it kind of surprised me. So it's always easy to say, oh, you know, YouTube should have done live video or YouTube should do this. But I do think if they could get a base of subscription subscribers where that can support, you know, creators on YouTube, you know, that's a pretty good thing to work on. And you'll always have people saying, oh, YouTube should have done Periscope first or Meerkat first or live video first. And that's fair criticism. But I do think I didn't realize how good the premium shows on YouTube Red were. And that sort of makes me say, OK, well, yeah, for example, take the chat stuff. You know, probably getting the artificial intelligence machine learning down is a little harder than the chat or the app and getting that exactly right.
Right.
And so, you know, maybe we haven't invested all of the resources, completely optimally. But I do feel like Google Now and the artificial intelligence aspect of it are pretty well positioned if we can then find an app or a way of communicating that people really like and can sort of come together on.
That's very astute. Information, very guidance. I guess I have to use the financial term, the guidance from.
Well, this is all just my personal opinion looking from the outside.
Outside. But that makes sense because Hangouts feels like it's been kind of left to drift. But you're exactly right. That's an easy thing to play catch up with. That's trivial. But the hard thing is the AI. And Google Now is way ahead of anything anybody else is doing.
We're in pretty good shape on AI. Now, to be fair, like getting the network effects, like it's hard to try to come back from behind once everybody's on one platform for
that
messaging
is true.
And chat. So that is tricky. But, I think they've got good people working on all the aspects of the problem.
Sure.
So
I'm sure they do. Yeah, Apple's going to have trouble because right now they're not cross-platform. And even if they made a cross-platform messages, it's really an iOS thing. And so Facebook really just seems to have the inside track just because everybody's on Facebook. And you know, the big thing that happened to me was a few weeks ago, I guess this was part of Marshmallow Android 6, but all of a sudden, instead of just using Google's messaging app or the Samsung SMS app or Hangouts, I could use Facebook Messenger. Said, oh, you want me to be your SMS app? I could do that too. And then others did. And so now I have many choices, and I'm actually trying Facebook Messenger as my SMS app. And because it's Facebook, it has, you know, a lot of features that are superior. So you can choose. This is a Galaxy S7, but if you go into default apps, right now I can choose from a variety of them, including Signal, which is the, you know, super secret encrypted one. And I, you know, I don't know why Telegram isn't in there, but that's a big change. And so when if I use Messenger as my app, now Facebook messaging and SMS messaging is all going to the same one. That's a huge advantage.
That is.
And Google kind of did a weird thing. When I got Project Fi, they said, oh, please don't use Hangouts. Use the messaging app. Maybe that was carriers. That might have been carriers enforcing that one.
Well, Google's got, you know, three apps that do it, which is really confusing.
So yeah, and carriers want you to stick with SMS, right? They don't want you to use data.
Well, there's the AOSP app, then there's Messenger,
right,
which is Google's one that's confusing when you search for Facebook Messenger, and then there's Hangouts,
right,
and then there's still Google Voice lurking in there somewhere. So
and
I'm
they
never
turned
quite
off
sure
the widget. They turned off the Hangouts widget, which was another way of nudging you out of the Hangouts ecosphere at exactly the time where, if I were them, not knowing everything about what's going on inside, I would have said, let's get more people to use our platform.
Yep. I think that's fair criticism. Yeah, things got muddled. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Apple's gonna miss out no matter what happens because they want they double down on privacy, security. They want to keep you in the Apple ecosystem. There's a strategy tax for that, and that's the strategy tax. Facebook's in a really good position, especially since they also own WhatsApp, so they really have global dominance. But Google can be in there, and Amazon's the dark horse, because no matter what you say, I think Echo is a messaging platform. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of time before they start integrating some of these skills, which you're right, are kind of ghettoized right now. They're kind of separate. You have to turn them on, and you have to use this weird syntax to get to this skill. But that's just, I think that's it. That's probably more just kind of a Darwinian selection process, and eventually I would imagine Amazon will kind of unify that platform.
Well, my theory on the Google versus Alexa thing is that they need to make one of those, but one that integrates with
Now.
But now is the obvious thing, but also it needs to integrate with nearby screens. So it needs to be able to put stuff on the screen for you.
Yeah. So you could say Google Box, or let's say Han Hub. On Hub, play Game of Thrones for me on my living room TV.
And I can do that at the moment with my phone. I can say, or my watch, I can say, play this, and I've got the Chromecast, and it can know where to send it. The thing that the Alexa can do is know where in the room you are, because it's got a microphone array. So it can actually, you know, if you've got an open plan house like I have, and there's two TVs that are available, it can pick which one you're near to and make that work. So that's, ooh, you know, the thing that you get by having that physical object that has six or seven microphones in it is you actually get to triangulate on people. And so that, I think that if you remember, what was it called? Oblong. Do you remember Oblong? They were the company that was, that did the stuff, for the, what was that movie? The
Oblong.
So basically what Oblong did was they would let you attach gadgets to, TV sets in a room and have a pointing device and say, put that stuff there and put that stuff there and have control, like do a presentation. So they were selling this to large companies as a, in your war room, you need a bunch of screens and we can control all the screens and you can move stuff back and forth. And I've played with it and had demos of it. It's cool tech, but it was sort of proprietary and required. You spend a lot of money with them. But we're sort of walking towards having that ability in the home as we gradually have a bunch of screens and we put, you know, a little $35 widget in the back of every screen. And, you know, Apple could do this, certainly, because they've got Apple TV as well. But Google's have this ability and have it cheaper. So it's easier to stick a bunch of Chromecasts in things. And the Chromecast will do the thing of switch to that channel and show you the show if you plug it in correctly, which means you can do that thing of, I want to order some flowers, and it would say turn the screen on and say which one of these do you want, and show you, give you that visual interface as well. So I think there's a bunch of interesting bits and pieces to be worked out there, and it does involve having lots of stuff in the house. But I think that's a natural next step for a lot of these things, and it's the back and forth between the spoken stroke typed query and the richer visual response that's going to be the next iteration of this stuff.
Facebook's saying we're very serious about that. They just hired away Alphabet's head, Regina Dugan, head of the Advanced Technology and Products Group. Actually, she was at Google. Before that, she was a director of DARPA. She is going to come to Facebook with a $100 million plus budget to do R&D in Building 8. Zuckerberg says hundreds.
That's not about consumer products, right? That's about big advanced research.
It's about the drones. What is it? Akila?
Google X, Facebook.
She's. We have a drone to fly over the campus. So this isn't consumer facing. This is like what?
I don't know. I'm asking. Is that? I don't. Yeah. She's not going to be making phones, is she?
Well, yes, ATAP was doing Project Ara. I doubt very much she's going to be doing modular phones for Facebook.
Learned that lesson.
But she certainly knows about a lot more than that. I mean, DARPA was about very big ideas, right?
Yeah.
And I suspect AI. According to Bloomberg Technology, she's going to direct efforts to build hardware that uses Facebook software and complements technologies from Oculus VR and the company's artificial intelligence research unit. So AI, VR.
It's like the guy at Hooli who got promoted up.
No, it's not. Well, come on. Do you know Regina, job, Matt? Do you know her?
I don't know her personally, but I think Regina is super smart. And the article says she's going to be building things that are mission aligned. And certainly stuff like Tango, things like Johnny Lee had worked on, where he had worked on the Kinect before that. So there's some really neat stuff that happens at ATAP. They've got radar where you can go like this to scroll stuff. So I think if she's working on interesting hardware that aligns with things that Facebook wants to do, I think that'll be really interesting. It's always sad when somebody leaves Google. The idea that somebody would put hundreds of people and hundreds of millions of dollars into this effort over time, I can see the appeal of that to her. So we'll see what happens over time.
Such a huge advantage to have as Facebook and Apple and Google do this just massive, unbelievably massive bankroll to do this kind of blue sky R&D. It's pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's good to have all these ideas coming out and people trying out a bunch of new things, you know, whether they be satellites or drones or airplanes or closer to the home kind of tech. But it's nice that people aren't just resting on their laurels. Right. I do worry a little bit about whether some of the chatbot stuff is like just a step back and everybody's going to wait, and a year from now they'll be like, well, that was a fad. What were we thinking, you know?
Right.
We'll see what happens there.
Well, you have to do that, though, right? I mean, I think that it's still possible that could be the case for VR, for instance, despite all the money and publicity it's been getting. And I've been having a lot of fun playing with my Oculus Rift, but I don't know if the fun translates into something more lasting or if it's just, you know, like a steering wheel for your driving game. I mean, it makes it more realistic. I don't know. It's hard to tell, right?
So I actually worked on today here with social VR, where you play with somebody else and then you give each other images to step into, and you create each other's avatars, and you can have an interaction on each other's avatars. And they even showed off today an Oculus Rift virtual selfie stick, where you're in the same environment together and the two avatars come together and take a picture of themselves, and then they put it in a little box and it went right on to Facebook. I mean, it's fun stuff to think about VR as social, but you're right. I don't know.
Well,
and they're in a virtual Westminster Bridge or something. That was the bit that was...
Yeah, there it is. But what's weird is... well, not weird, but what's disappointing is that you're not going to be able to do this for some time because they're way delayed on these paddles, September at the earliest. So all of these things are cool, but it's not anything anybody can do except in the Facebook labs.
Part of the problem for me at least, is I actually worked on virtual reality stuff back in grad school in the late 90s. And, you know, like 70% of all virtual reality demos are like, okay, we're going to put two people in a space and they're going to look at a computer part. And we're like, oh, we need to change that computer part's tiny little parametric thing here. Oh, now everything's ready to go. Send it off to the, to the 3D printer. And if you look more closely, like every single one of these demos is like, why couldn't they have done this in person or over a video conference? Yeah. And the idea that they're actually going to change the design of some CAD part together in a virtual space. I'm just allergic to that demo, and that demo happens a lot with this sort of technology.
Yeah.
Well, that bizarre Microsoft one where they put his daughter in the room with him, except she couldn't see him. And when they did put the guy who could see him in, then all you could see was each other's goggles, so you couldn't actually make eye contact. It's like, you're missing the point in a painful way here.
Well, it's good for gaming.
Yeah. Entertainment, absolutely.
So actually, I have an app for this, which was next to our conversation before the show, which is the thing that actually makes sense for this is theater. My son puts his play on in London, and I'd like to sit back and face a Google camera in the front row and watch it from there, rather than have someone filming on their phone from the front row and not seeing all the action, because you can't. You're either too far back and you can't see what's going on, or you're too far forward and then they've got a panel over the place to try and follow the action. Whereas, you know, to actually film a stage play properly takes six cameras and a director and then a bunch of editing afterwards. Whereas if you could just stick one of those things in one of the seats, that would actually be a useful way of getting the experience. So I think that's a thing that makes sense. And it also makes sense in that you can't edit in VR. As soon as you cut, you've got to wait 5-10 seconds for somebody to work out what happened and where they are. And you can't do montage. You can't cut through stuff. So you either have to direct it like Birdman, or you have to sit the camera in one place and have it act around you. And that's where the theater stuff makes sense. And in some ways, it makes more sense for this kind of small room experimental in the round theater than it does for the proscenium arch style theater. So I think that there's a set of interesting things that will happen there. But it's going to be hard for people who are used to directing video, because all the grammar you're used to with video doesn't work. So I tried out the Jungle Book demo for VR. Which did you see that one?
No.
So
this is on Oculus.
Was it Oculus? No, I think it was one of the other ones. I think it was
Revive.
Samsung VR thing.
Okay. Well, I have that. I could try that.
But they sit you know, you go into the room and you're in the room where Louis is, and then Blue comes in. Except the problem is, I could hear Louis speaking, but I didn't know where he was. I thought the little monkey in front of me was him, and then I turned around, and this very large monkey behind was the one who was actually talking to me. And it's like the mise en scène, you know, the audio wasn't good enough to give me a cue of which direction I was supposed to be looking. So I missed like a big chunk of this of the action here.
What, Matt? You said you did this kind of research in college. What? How does what we're seeing today compare? It seems to me that except with the exception of the headsets are smaller and lighter and don't have a big cord coming off the back to a Silicon Graphics workstation, that what we're seeing isn't so far different from the stuff I remember trying at SIGGRAPH in the early 90s.
Yep. I don't want to be the skeptic. It is true. You get more polygons, you get better rendering, you have better resolution. But, you know, we had a ceiling that would light up, and you'd use a Kalman filter, and it would do 20,000 projections per second, so it had very low latency. What is new is you have better inertial sensors, better accelerometers. You know, cell phones have driven the price of those way down. So you can do this stuff self-contained, but unless you really dedicate your hardware in very specific ways, the latency is bad, then people get sick, you can't register in the augmented reality, and I really don't think most people have actually solved this problem yet.
Oh,
which is, you know, maybe some of these, you know, dedicated hardware as well. But if you just slap, you know, a phone in front of your face, or if you just use phone hardware without specifically trying to make sure the latency is good, it's going to be fun for 10 minutes, but people aren't going to work in it. They're not going to actually collaborate or do too much social stuff. So I'm a little skeptical that people have really done the hard work. The technology has gotten better, but you need special purpose hardware to really do this stuff well.
This is one of those shows.
We got VR, we got augmented reality, but we can't get a goddamn Skype connection to work to save our lives.
And I'm on the goddamn floor.
I know. I think we got a ways to go, to be honest.
But your lighting looks good.
Technology. Can we just work on the basics for a little while?
Yeah.
I just tweeted a picture of my perspective here at F8 doing the show.
That's, you know what? Are you comfortable? I see you got a little lunch. No.
I'm sitting on some F8 t-shirts trying to cushion my bony ass.
I feel so bad.
Right across from me is the snack line and the water cooler. And
go get something to eat.
I don't want to run away from my machine and somebody's going to steal it or something.
Oh.
No one would steal that F8.
No one would steal that. Yeah. Pixel C. Done. Are you kidding me? You're more likely to get it thrown out. Somebody left some old junk on the floor there. Sweep that up. No, I love my Pixel C. I'm just teasing. Here's the picture. Here's Jeff's POV. Leo seems to be falling asleep in that picture.
Yeah, yeah. So somebody says hi here, Leo. Come on in. Wait, come on in. Come on in. Put us up.
Hey, it's Colleen. Hi, Colleen. Oh, my God. Colleen works for Facebook now, of course, our genius engineer who put Twit on the map. How are you?
Just getting ready to have the end of the live stream, so then I can go home and then have hopefully a vacation for a while.
Have you? So this is what you've been doing at Facebook is streaming.
Yeah, but you'll notice that, did you see the demo that was like the green screen stuff where my friend Joyce was playing with other people in VR? Or I'm also in the 360 camera shoot, so I've been working on VR and spherical and stuff like that.
Cool. Come up here and visit us. You can show me how to use this Oculus Rift thing.
We still miss you at Google, Colleen.
Oh, man.
We still miss
you.
You
stole her from us, and then Facebook stole her from you.
All right. I love you, Matt. Talk to you guys
love you
soon.
Too.
Nice to be in demand. I didn't realize you knew Matt, too. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
We had a good time at Google.
The crossroads of the world.
Well, your lighting is really good, Jeff. You look dramatic.
It's the window floor level. I'm right next to the garbage can. And the
was it Tantalus who could,
the water.
Yeah, who, Tantalus could never get down to the water or up to the fruit, and you're just right there.
He's being tantalized.
It's more of a Kevin Marks kind of reference than a
Yeah, no kidding. You can just work some epigony in there. You got it made, man.
If we could just reify something.
We're going to, Jeff suggested that we buy this, and for the next broadcast, you can use this. This is one of the cameras that they demonstrated yesterday on the stage at F8 for live video. So we played a lot with Facebook Live last week, and it definitely had a big role at F8, right, Jeff?
Yes, it really has. It's huge. And this is they announced the Facebook Live API. So what I believe that means is that you'll be able to take your output, Leo, and stick it into Facebook
cool.
Live. So without having to use, the tablet or be a mess. It also enables you to pull other things so that you can put comments straight in. So there's one of the API users, CNN was demonstrating that they can have a stream of comments, and then you can pull a comment out and just put it on the screen. So finally, the chat room can feel like they're legitimate. And then this Mevo camera is the other thing that was first built with the Facebook API, the live video API.
It's kind of interesting because it gets a 4K picture into the camera, which you can then control with an iPhone, and you can pick your shot, or you can use face recognition for it to follow you, because what you're going to get is a 1080p, so you're going to get one quarter of the screen somewhere, and it's streaming out live.
It's a three-camera shot with one camera and an iPhone. So if you go to the video there, Leo, you can see how it shows that you just point at somebody's face. The cooking demo is a good one.
Yeah, it's the only one far as I can tell. That's why I'm a little suspicious, but it's... As soon as they put another video up, I'll be thrilled. Yeah, so Taste Made, which is, I guess, a cooking podcast, used this. And so the camera's tiny, but the problem is you still need a director. And the director, instead of using a TriCaster, is using an iPhone.
But I was thinking, Leo, what if you started a day and that were – you used to have to switch yourself.
Yeah.
What if you had – all you do is you point at one person's face and it'll zoom in on that person, like right here.
Right.
And that makes that shot. Then you can move that box down and show their hand.
No, I like it.
Give the other shot.
We'll have to see how smoothly the transitions go and all of that. But that's a very intriguing –
Well, that's the thing. This, I mean, this fits in what I was saying about the problem of capturing live theatre. It's that same thing of,
right.
I want a single thing to point at the stage, but I can edit it afterwards.
Right.
And, you know, you can do that with a little 360 cam, but the problem is this res isn't up to it yet. You could do it with the big 360 cams, but this looks like an interesting...
Yeah, Facebook's is $30,000. The Ozo from Nokia is $60,000. I imagine if you built a Google Jump camera, it'd be comparably... 16 cameras is going to be very, very expensive.
Yeah,
this is just a single high-res camera and a very wide angle. It's a 150-degree angle lens. And
I saw the guys from the company, and I said, ooh, that's it. And I said, where can I get it? They said, you can order it now and $100 off.
Yeah,
so
we did. I went right in the... You did too?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Did you see the BuzzFeed Labs camera kit?
No. Tell us about that.
Dude. So BuzzFeed Labs is their like sort of research thingy they have in San Francisco. And I went to their open day a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things they've built is the field reporters 360 video, which is basically two GoPros and a good microphone.
And boy, does that look professional.
It looks scruffy.
Okay, don't 3D print it in red. Maybe that would make it look a little bit better.
Oh, my God.
That's all right. It's,
when the watermelon explodes on it, you won't be worried.
Right.
It's an intermediate step between there's that little camera you can buy that's $300, but that is lower res, whereas this is full res GoPros that are gen locked, so it can give you
they're gen locked. Well, that's okay. That's a big deal.
And a decent mic, and so they've put this together.
Yeah, the Zoom is a great mic. Yeah,
you know, what would be a sensible thing to do this with that's still like reasonably affordable?
And this is 360 as well. It is, yeah, it's immersive as well.
So they basically they put this together. They're using it, but they also put together here's how you can make your own and plug this together for other reporters to do the same thing.
YouTube's going to have three or four live streams from Coachella. I imagine at least one of them will be 360 degrees, because YouTube, of course, supports it. Facebook supports it. Almost even more than VR, I think 360 degrees is going to be useful because of that immersion thing that you can be there.
I think 180 is going to. What I'm surprised is I'm not seeing more 180 degree cameras.
Yeah, 180 is plenty, to be honest.
Because I shot a whole bunch of stuff at you know, I just put my Theta up in the air during the keynote and stuff. You didn't care what was behind me. You didn't care what was in front of me.
Well, the same thing with theater. I guess unless you put it in the middle of the action. But if you put it at the front of the stage, you really don't care what the audience is doing behind you.
Yeah.
No, so exactly. So you don't necessarily need to have the back at full resolution.
Well, this camera has 150, so it's not quite all the way around, but it's pretty close. Not all the way around. I mean, all the way in front. But it's close enough that, you know, that would probably be adequate for us, for instance.
Yeah, that would be interesting to play with. But the other part of this is the difference between the reason they have 16 or 17 cameras is that actually gets you good stereoscopy. So there's a difference. If you've just got two lenses pointing opposite directions, you just get a sphere.
Right.
Whereas if you've got lots of them like that, you can actually move your head and you get that sense of being there that you get with the Oculus when it's actually giving you separate eye views and understanding where your head is. And that's one of the there's two things of 3D perception. Dana Boyd wrote some interesting research on this. But there's the parallax between the viewpoint, but there's also you look at the object and adjust how you're looking, and that decides, you know, is that foot in front of it or is it behind it?
Kevin, the children of the corn are behind you. No, I'm sorry. Never mind. There's a storm going on back there. I don't know what's going on.
I need to go and put a towel in my microphone.
I think, is that lightning I'm seeing? Oh, my God.
Oh. We're not in Kansas anymore. Just spiral upwards.
Speaking of ill winds, what's this deal with BuzzFeed having to cut its revenue expectations in half, Jeff? And then the CEO's denying it.
Jonah was on the stage yesterday, and then I heard that the PR people were saying that, no, this was overblown, the numbers weren't right. And it wasn't so much that they lost money, it's that the expectations were very high.
They thought they were going to make half a billion, they're only going to make a quarter of a billion. In revenue, not profit, revenue.
Yeah, which is bad management. I mean, I don't know. I think the product they sell, my argument is that BuzzFeed sells a service to advertisers. You know, we can make our stuff viral, we can make your stuff viral, and that's not easy. That's not cheap to do. Is this, you know, the end of native advertising? No, I can only hope. But I don't know. Jonah was on stage yesterday with Chris Cox, and they had a nice chat about how wonderful Facebook is and how wonderful BuzzFeed is, and nobody asked anything about that.
Yeah. Is this new? I can go to m.me/my Facebook handle, and that's my that's my Messenger feed. I wonder if that's new. All the bots are there too. So m.me/CNN, for instance, is how you would add the CNN bot to your Messenger feed. One way, anyway. You can also search for it. That's, by the way, one problem. It's kind of hard to find. So I went to m.me/CNN, and this is, and then it pops up. It's hard to find some of these bots. I don't know if they're going to have a bot store. Third parties are doing that, but kind of unknown. The store is critical, isn't it? Because that's what, if you're going to be the app for the platform, then you're going to need to have somewhere to go to get the apps. All right, let's take a break. We're going to come back with more. We have the greatest panel ever.
The bots don't need, you don't need to install an app because it's a web server effectively. It's just, yeah, it's just a different UI to a web server.
Yeah, but you need to follow them, which is the equivalent of installing them. You have to say hello, kind of. Hello bot. I mean, yeah, there's nothing to install. It's a lot easier.
Right.
But you do
have. Yeah,
to...
you. So the point of that is you've now got a URL that lets you open a chat window, which Twitter has too. Twitter has a thing that lets you open a DM. There's a URL link to do that, and it'll spawn it in the browser, it'll spawn it on your...
Right. Yeah, it's just using a URL scheme.
Yeah. It's just using an HTTP scheme, but then it redirects depending on what's installed.
Right.
And they both made that work, which is, you know, a sensible thing to do, because making things linkable is a good idea.
Well, and I might put it in my email signature, right? Yeah. If I want to fill my inbox with spam, I think I will.
Well, it makes you know, the thing they're selling it to is companies. It's like, click here to chat to somebody, and you're chatting inside the environment you're comfortable with.
Right. Right. Chat with us.
Yeah. Yes. Because, like, when your washing machine breaks, what you really want to do is chat with them.
So the reason I liken it more to an install is because as soon as you communicate with a chat bot, it's there. It doesn't go away. It's not like going to a web page and you don't have to go back to that web page. No, you've invited it into your home like a vampire.
Yeah.
And now, hey, my God, it's old home week. There's Alex Lindsay in the headset. Alex, are you working or are you visiting?
No comment.
Okay.
just wandering around,
just,
you know.
Yeah, just having fun. Having fun.
Yeah. Anyway, just thought I'd say hi.
Nice to see you.
Yeah. See?
These are all people who used to work with me.
My studio.
Now have better jobs. Good. And that's why our Skype doesn't work so well.
I know. Just fair warning that the last talk just ended at Herbst. I could get kicked out of here, in which case I'll go find some place under a tree with next to an access point.
But. All right. Well, let me do the ad, and then we can just end the damn show. All right.
No. Keep going. I'm just warning you. That's all. People are walking out.
Do the ad like I get a surprise.
Grumpy Leo. I'm sitting on the friggin' floor for you. Jeez. I'm next to a garbage can. I run across to get my water and my potato chips.
I made a tenured professor sit on the floor for me, and you won't believe what happened next.
So I get hungry, I can just pick an orange. See?
Yeah, I know. Oh, shut up. Shut the front door. That's, by the way, how my father in 1971 convinced the ninth grade Leo that it would be okay to move from Rhode Island to this place called California. He said, literally, you'll be able to go out to your back porch and pick an orange right off the tree. It was like the Jode family. We loaded up the pickup, put Grandma on the rocker in the back, and we drove out to California.
Well, let's get paid. That's the main thing. Let's get you paid, Leo. So you can stay in California.
I want to stay. Oh, man, with the tax rate in here, I got to do some ads. Holy cow. Huh. Lisa says, you know, as soon as you're done, we're moving to Nevada because there's no income tax there. So I don't want to live in Nevada. I want to live in California. Well, it's going to cost you 13% of your income every single year.
Then you'll have no.
Huh?
You'll have no income then. That's right. And you won't need the tax. Right. That's right. What you tell her.
And by the way, you can't.
By the way, it's really good.
What's good?
This looks good. I'm not pink. This lighting is good.
No, the camera's fantastic. The audio's not so hot, but the camera's fantastic. No, it's not. It's fine.
Don't make your money so you can buy me a better
I'm room. Amazed that you can do what you're doing with a Pixel C. Have you put Nut Roll on it yet?
No, not on this one. No, because I don't want it to be dicey for my important shows with you.
Yeah, because we've had some people have said it's crashing their Pixel C. Mine's working great with it. By the way, Matt, right? Nut Roll, that's what you're going to call it?
What was the blog post? I'm not Nutellin'.
Nutellin'. It's not going to be Nutella, though. It's kind of, well, maybe it is. I'm Nutellin'. That kind of sounds like, yeah, it kind of sounds like Nutella. How? Tell me about the cafeteria, Google. Is there a lot of Nutella there?
It's strange. They used to have a lot of marshmallows. Yeah. I don't see that anymore. That's weird. How did you mention it? A lot of nougat.
Nougat. It's all over the place.
Nougat river. Yeah. You can just kind of swim in the nougat river.
Actually, there's a town in France. When I was a kid, we went to a town in France that's famous for their nougat. And you could get nougat. You could get nougat at the gas station. You could get nougat every. You couldn't get away from nougat. I don't know if it's. I don't know if it's still like that, but it's good nougat. Now I want some nougat. But instead, I'm going to give you all the magazines you can eat. Now, wait a minute. I know that doesn't sound very delicious, but it is. If you think about how we've been binge watching television shows on Netflix, wouldn't it be nice to binge read magazines? Some of the best journalism is still being done in magazines, weekly and monthly magazines. But here's the problem. I could think of a dozen magazines that there's always at least one article every issue I want to read. The New Yorker, Rolling Stone, Wired. Vanity Fair. There's always at least one article, but am I going to go out and buy that magazine? $5 for that magazine just to read that one article, let alone subscribe, and then my coffee table's buried, and I feel bad about the trees. See, Texture is the solution. Texture lets you subscribe to all those magazines and many, many more, the best magazines in the world, and they come delivered to your phone or your tablet automatically. You can read them offline. You're going to find magazines that you know, like Billboard. You're not going to go buy Billboard, but you know what? There's great stuff in there. If you're interested in the music industry, the Billboard charts alone. And every page that is in that magazine is on your tablet. And it's not just this month's edition or this week's edition. It's back issues, too, plus bonus features you can't put in print, like videos, Car and Driver, you know, some great videos. National Geographic, just for the pictures. I think the images look better on my iPad than they look in print. Because you're getting all the resolution. Consumer Reports. If you like science, popular science is awesome. PC Magazine, Macworld Magazine, PC World, Popular Photography. And all for one flat rate. And by the way, finding articles is easy because their editorial team lets you deep dive into interviews and stories that they, you know, you show your interest. They say, oh, you got to read this. I could star my favorite magazines, and that adds them to my personal library, downloads them automatically. You can even share your subscription with your family. I'll be honest, it's not my subscription, it's Lisa's subscription. We may read different magazines, but we get to share the subscription, which is really fantastic. You're going to love it. I want you to try it free right now. Texture, TEXTURE.com/twig. Texture.com/twig. You know what's great is, I read all the highbrow magazines. I got my New Yorker, my National Geographic. But every once in a while, a little Entertainment Weekly or People magazine. That's not going to hurt, is it, Jeff? That's good for you. Jeff created Entertainment Weekly, I should mention. I'm not going to bring up all the laws. And actually, good news, the California, crazy California assembly bill to ban the sale of smartphones in California that had strong encryption has flopped. It has been.
Yeah.
It did not make it out of committee. Yep. And thanks probably to the EFF, which has done such great work, EFF.org/action. And get your member of Congress or your state representative in there and send them emails because we still have this Burr-Feinstein thing hanging over our heads. And there's a new one. I wasn't going to go into this, but what the heck? The Email Privacy Act.
That's good news.
Actually, this is good.
So you guys, see, this is why you got to stay in touch with Congress, because they can do good things too. This is, people didn't realize that your email was not protected in the same way your snail mail is protected, right? Mm-hmm. Matt, what's the story?
So basically, the Electronic Communications Privacy Act dates back to 1986, before anybody had cloud mail. Back then, they assumed your mail would be sort of local on your hard drive. And so after 180 days, you know, if you had a cloud provider, they didn't need a warrant. So somebody could come to Gmail or Outlook and just do a subpoena and not have to get a warrant.
It was considered abandoned.
Yeah. Which is crazy. So, you know, now this thing, the Email Privacy Act, which eliminates that loophole, has made it out of the House Judiciary Committee, which is fantastic news.
28-0.
Yeah. So, you know, now we got to tell people in the Senate to vote for it and tell people in the House to vote for it. But for the first time, you might actually have your cloud email protected just like you would if you were doing it locally, you know, and sort of bringing it in line with what everybody in society would expect to get as far as privacy protections.
Yeah, you know, it probably was a loophole, but it's about time we stitched that loophole up, because that's terror. That's ridiculous. That's it. This is HR. Let me get the bill number. So, well, you know, again, EFF is a great place to go. Is it going to be HR? Maybe they haven't assigned a number to it yet. Just came out of committee. Right. Is it 699? Yeah, HR 699. You could just say Email Privacy Act. That'll do it. The Email Privacy Act. And again, EFF does a great job at EFF.org/action. You can find out who your member of Congress is, and they have good advice for how to contact them. It turns out snail mail or phone is better than email. I don't want to talk about the textilizer.
Did you see that they now have colorful USB cables?
For the textilizer?
So for USB-C, you know, you could always get colorful regular USB cables.
Oh, but yes.
If you look in the rundown under other, Monoprice now has I've got a Chromebook Pixel and I've got a Nexus 5X, and so all of my USB-C cables look, you know, the same, and they get lost. And now they've got red, white, blue, and black.
I have been ordering. And by the way, a Benson Long approved. That's so great. I have been ordering gold braided USB-C cables for exactly the same reason. I don't want to confuse it with my mic, because even if you don't look real closely, they even look like micro USB a little bit. So it's easy to accidentally use the wrong one. So very nice. And Benson has won the battle, because Amazon has stopped selling the bad USB-C cables. There's a potential problem with the old USB.
We're living in the future.
Yeah, baby. They're missing a resistor, which could fry your MacBook or your Pixel C by charging a phone with an inappropriate cable from those devices. Not only has Amazon stopped selling them, but there's now software, right, that could run on the Mac or other devices and detect this before it's a problem on your Chromebook Pixel, before it's a problem, right? So this is, we're finally, I don't know anybody's system guy. There it is. Software fix is coming for USB-C cables. That's Dieter Bohn writing in The Verge. And that's actually from the U.S. I think that's coming from the USB Alliance. So, good thing. And Benson really gets a lot of credit. I think, do you know Benson Leung?
I follow him on internal Google Plus. I haven't gotten to meet him in real life, but anytime I'm going to buy a cable, I check to see if it's Benson approved.
Oh, got to be Benson approved. Yeah. He's awesome. He just took it on himself. He's a Google engineer who just said, you know what, this is a terrible thing. These cables, you could fry your computer with it. So he just tests it on his Chromebook Pixel with various software, and he reports back in the reviews, and always read the Amazon reviews. I hate to say this, Jeff, but Louis C.K.
I know.
Says Horace and Pete has sunk him into millions of dollars in debt.
So people go out and buy it. It's not much money, $31. It's an experience like theater. It's amazing. It's adventuresome. It's creative. I really enjoyed it. I watched every show, bought every show. And we want this kind of creativity and independence. So go watch Horace and Pete, please. It's weird. It's strange. It's different. But, hey, that's what, you know, different is. Different is strange. That's by definition. So I don't want to hear people like Leo complaining it's too odd. Just go buy it.
I bought the first episode. Some finished it.
You dropped off.
Yeah. Well, so, okay. So there's, you could ascribe a number of things to the failure of this, or at least so far the failure of this. One, that Louis himself decided not to promote it in any way.
Yeah.
And two, that it was a little odd. He had a great cast. And it was very much like a play.
I think now what he should do is go to a place like Netflix and sell them.
He can get his money out of it.
He can get.
Yeah.
He's Louis C.K.
Yeah. In fact, he says, you know, so this is on Howard Stern, right? He says, after four episodes, the whole idea was I'm not going to have to spend my own money after that. Not quite. And he says, I believe he's millions of dollars in debt now, but I believe that by the end of summer, the whole show will have paid itself off. And then he'll consider selling it, which he's resisted so far because he wants to, good for him, create a new avenue for making this, not going through HBO or Netflix, but doing it himself.
And there's some episodes that are different than others, but it's really creative. It's really different.
Fabulous cast.
Different entertainment. Yeah. Oh, an unbelievable cast. Paul Simon did the theme song for him. It's really quite something.
Although the New York Times said how Horace and Pete made the network suits look good.
But there was another New York Times piece that just went on elegiacally about how magnificent Horace and Pete was. Well, so, you know, different strokes. Right.
Yeah. This piece is basically saying that the network suits rightly rejected Horace and Pete. I don't know if that's the case.
Suits have given us such great stuff, yeah.
Yeah, right. There's plenty of stuff that they could have rejected. There's some great, by the way, the actors in it are fantastic, and it's really fun to see Alan Alda chew the scenery in a way that he probably was never allowed to.
As a nasty son of a bitch.
He swears up a blue streak. And I have a feeling that because, you know, he's Alan Alda, he was never allowed to be that guy. And he's just loving it.
Absolutely.
I have heard from many people who really enjoyed it, by the way, and thanked you for recommending it.
Yeah. Support this kind of creativity.
That's really the truth, you know. And I you know what? I'm going to go buy. So you can now buy the whole thing.
I don't know that you can buy it. It's the other thing. You should have made it easy just to buy. I would have bought up front, and he would have at least.
You had to go episode by episode.
One. Yeah.
Can I play a little bit? This is. We may have to blooper this. I don't know. Here, let me rewind. There's no laugh track.
Nothing real to say about her. You're incapable of a real debate.
Yeah, well, the problem with you liberals, you think you're the good guys. You think that gives you a pass to do random criminal acts. You know, I saved an owl and I can go kill a baby.
That seems like you must know that's not true.
It's kind of an interesting thing the way you guys define yourselves and each other. Liberal, conservative. How would you define a liberal? Like, to you, what is a liberal?
Just PC. Animal rights.
Don't try. You can't try to blow it.
Always pushing the liberal agenda. They hate Christians and they hate white men. You know why? Because they don't think it through. And they think they're better than everyone else and that they should tell everyone else how to think. They're just
okay. How would you define a conservative?
Just Jesus everything, and they hate gay people and racist, but pretending they're not, and they're selfish, and they only care about money, and they think everyone has to do their conservative Christian.
See, the fact that you start out by seeing each other like that. I mean, how could you possibly ever respect each other or agree on anything?
Yeah, well, they do that. I don't.
See, I like this. And I think that this is, you're never going to see that on network television. The profanity
never.
Because it's too, that's very controversial. And yet you can tell that's Louis C.K. Did he write all of them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You can tell that's him honestly talking about some stuff that's really important.
It is an autopsy of a completely dysfunctional, messed up family and what happens generation to generation. Louis C.K. as a character is, you know, he's not a great guy. He's just a schmuck. He's just a guy. And that's what it is. It's a show about a guy.
And, with a great supporting cast. Here's Steve Buscemi and Alan Alda and Louis C.K. in the background. So.
Hi there.
This is Alan Alda.
Budweiser, please.
This is great.
He's the bartender in this. He's pouring him a beer.
$4.50.
$4.50.
Oh. I thought I heard you charge that guy $3 for a Budweiser.
Don't worry about what I charge him.
Just don't get why I have to pay more.
You don't have to pay more. You can also get the out.
I can't just charge different people different prices. That's not...
Hey, kid. You going to pay for this beer or are you going to wear it? Listen, you mumbling little You say, one more time. What did I do? What?
Just let me get it. I got it.
Keep going.
Hey, sorry. You all right? What's up?
Yeah, I was charged $4.50 for Budweiser. Yeah. That guy was charged $3. Just not sure why the discrepancy.
He's been coming here a long time.
Oh, so is that a privilege for just that one guy, or is like more people that
some
get to
people,
pay?
Some people pay $4.50, some people pay $3.
Okay. How do you decide that? Is there like a list, or?
If he looks like him, he pays $3. If he looks like you, he pays $4.50.
So just out and out discrimination. Are you aware how totally unfair and not okay that is? I'm not sure what group. I mean, I'm Jewish. I'm gay.
Here's the thing. You're getting more for your money than he is.
How so?
Because, well, see, you come here and you make fun of the place because it's an old Brooklyn dive bar, so you and your friends get to enjoy that part of it, and then also you get to have a beer. But he just gets the beer. See, you're here ironically, but he's really here because he just lives on the corner.
So it's like a douche tax?
Yeah, kind of.
See, I love that. And
that is the greatest.
That's Louis C.K. You can hear it. That's his humor. That's, you know, he tells it like it is.
All right. The chat room says you can get all 10 episodes for $31.
I'm buying them all just to support
the whole season. Yeah, to support
Yay, Leo.
Yeah, because it's not that, it's frankly not that entertaining. But
still spend the money so that you support.
I want to support it. Exactly. It's the same thing. It's why people support us. It's not that good, but I want to, you know, I'd like to make sure Leo can keep doing that.
Right you are, Leo. Right you are.
WebRTC's coming to what? Apple?
Well, that would be nice.
Yeah. Apple, which, of course, famously said, FaceTime's open, and it's an open platform, and someday we'll tell you how it works. Never opened it up. But they have now said that they are going to place WebRTC into development for WebKit, the engine that powers the Safari browser. That is fabulous news. WebRTC, I think of it as a Google technology. It's not, right?
It's open, yeah.
It's an open technology. Google kind of has been promoting it, and of course, Hangouts uses it. WebRTC, right? I believe Kevin. Kevin's our expert on codecs.
Yeah, Hangouts has switched to using it. I mean, Hangouts was used a installable thing you had to put in for a while, but it will use up WebRTC when it can, and I think it still makes you install something on Safari. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, it won't have to going forward. That's the point.
Yeah, that's the point.
Now, WebRTC is not a codec, however. Doesn't specify the codec.
Well, no, but then you've got to get overlapping codecs for it to work.
So Google uses VP8, I think, right? Because it's unencumbered.
Yeah, but they also support MP4.
And MP4, which is encumbered because you have to go to the MPEG group to license it. It's probably what Apple will do, H.264 or something like that. Okay, so is it good news, Kevin? He's thinking. I feel like we're in a Louis C.K. story.
Seems like good news.
Seems like good news. Okay, that's all I want to know.
I mean, there's this kind of continual cycling around web standard stuff where, you know, one of the browsers will introduce something and then we want them all to do it so that we can all support that stuff and use it. And so there was a transition recently, which is that now Chrome and Firefox and Microsoft's new browser are all on a 6-week update cycle, effectively, whereas Apple is on an update cycle when they release new products. And so there was a point where Safari was the place that had all the new stuff, and now it lags a bit because either when they're releasing a new product or releasing a new OS version.
There is this Safari Purple now, which they are letting anybody use. I just installed it, which is their technology preview. So maybe Apple's becoming a little cognizant of the fact that they are not keeping up with the Joneses.
And they want to make sure the developer can get early access to that. And before you would get early access, but you would get it through newer versions of the OS, effectively.
Right.
So you wouldn't get, if you signed up for the developer program and you'd get the seeds for the next version of iOS, the next version of macOS, then there would be an update to Safari in that as well.
Right.
But yeah, there's a bunch of other web things that people are sort of waiting for Apple to add support for as well.
I thought WebKit was kind of an open source project. Yeah. Apple controls it?
So WebKit is an open source project, and it was the basis for Chrome, but then Chrome
forked
and became Blink, and so they're now a separate code base. And there was always some separation in the code base of the rendering and stuff. So now that basically pretty much Apple is using WebKit, and I'm not sure if anyone else is building browsers based on that, whereas others are building based on Chromium.
No, WebKit is definitely used in some Linux situations, I know. I'm not sure. Not Chromium, but some Linux browsers are using it.
Right.
And I see the libraries. GTK has a WebKit library, so I know they're still used somewhere. Here is definite good news. No doubt about it. Internet hyperlinks do not infringe copyright. Well,
says
who knew?
An advisory opinion.
Oh,
but look at that in Europe. But this tells the court that that wouldn't be such a good idea.
Were they actually considering such a nutty idea?
Yes, because, it's already there to an extent. If you link to copyright violations in some places, there is an argument that you're violating copyright yourself, which obviously is absurd because then everything you link to. Yes, there was legal discussion of this going on in some places in Europe.
Well, yes, in the Netherlands, a website provided a link to an Australian site showing pictures of a Dutch celebrity taken by Playboy magazine. The Australian site did not have Playboy's consent to do so. And so I guess it was Playboy saying, hey, we want to go after the Dutch site because you linked to the Australian site.
The same argument's being made that if you link
Pirate
to the
Bay.
Site.
Pirate exactly. Bay. Pirate Bay doesn't have any exactly. pirated content on it. It just has torrent links, which are just pieces of information that say, here's how to get something.
Right.
Now, you could make a stronger case, I guess, against that. Well, could you versus web links? I don't know. I guess it's not that different.
Because then the precedent you said is that you are responsible for the content of everything you link to. That's absurd on its face. But yes, there was discussion around that.
And it was triggered by Pirate Bay and the lawsuits they've already had around that.
If you think about it, though, if you're linking to a torrent of a pirated content, there really is no other. That's it, right? I mean, you're basically. I understand you're not a pirate, but you're facilitating it. Whereas a web link. I mean, I don't know. I get
because the same place that has some cracked version of Horace and Pete could also have a Linux distribution. So it's not clear,
right?
Why
not
somebody might be looking somewhere up.
Not all torrent links are bad. In fact, I've downloaded many a Linux distribution over BitTorrent.
Yeah.
For in the early days of Twit, we used BitTorrent to distribute.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, it was actually cool. It was cool because what I like about it is the first people who download it have seed it. So they kind of want to, you kind of get them to agree, okay, yeah, I'll seed it. Because the more seeds you have, the more effective it is. And so that was really neat. It really felt like it was kind of crowd distributing it. I liked it. I would have kept doing it. But not enough people really had the capability and nobody really understood what was going on. So we ended up doing just links.
You're always ahead, Leo. You're always ahead.
Oh, I would love to distribute via. In fact, we were thinking about BitTorrent Sync and all sorts of things. We had long conversations with Bram and the BitTorrent folks about different ways to do it. And certainly a portion of our audience is sophisticated enough and would love to have that. A significant portion, but not all of them. And I want everybody. Are they throwing you out, Jeff?
No, I'm outside now. Yeah, they threw me out of that, but I'm now outside in the food tent, which is now being torn up. But I'm still here.
Well, we could wrap it up. You've done a yeoman job.
The tent may come down on my head, but by God, I'm still here.
You and your bony butt are not going anywhere.
This week in bony butts.
Good news. The next big thing in Silicon Valley, according to the Washington Post, poets.
Finally employment. Finally employment for poets for the first time.
Full employment for what are these poets doing?
They're writing scripts for bots.
Ah, bot scripts. Yay. So you're gonna have a poetic bot.
Or we're gonna have a poet bubble. it could go either way, you know.
Well, I think Siri could use some. Well, let me just. You know that Siri is a big fan of the Game of Thrones, right? Do you know that? Is Jon Snow dead? Oh, you can't hear. I got to turn it up. Wait a minute. She's very quiet. I have to unlock her. She actually has an opinion on the subject. Turn this way up. Turn off the sound. Let's try it again. Hey, Siri, is Jon Snow dead?
Well, you know what they say to death. Not today, but why would tomorrow be any better? Anyway, I'm not exactly sure.
But is Jon Snow dead?
Dead is dead, or is it what's dead may never die? No, wait, death is so terribly final. I give up.
You know, I think they hired a poet.
Yeah.
Is Jon Snow dead?
Well, you know what they say to death. Not today. But why would tomorrow be any better? Anyway.
Siri, winter is coming.
Hodor.
That's good. Oh, that's fun.
That's it, right? That's the poet. That's the Full Employment for Poets Act of 1923.
That's how they could get scale. Get poet scale.
So I once went to the Bread Loaf Writers Conference in a rare moment when I was trying to be classy in life.
Yeah.
And if you wrote fiction or nonfiction, people would presume you did that for a living. But if you were a poet without fail, people would say, "Oh, and what do you do for a job?"
Well, that's kind of true.
It is.
I don't want to say anything. So.
So there is a bot that. Has poetry. This is, if you go to confetti.cool, this is a bot that the Known guys put together that you connect to your Slack channel and it sends you news posts in poem form.
And
I'm not quite sure why they built this, but it's kind of cute. I think the point of it was to demonstrate that they've got a bot kit that you can use to send news to Slack.
Confetti.cool.
Cool.
I'm probably spelling confetti wrong. No, I'm not. I'm part Italian. A very serious news service. Oh, it's a Slack bot. A lot of the best bots are written for Slack. I hope some of these will get migrated over to Facebook. Have you looked, Kevin, at how hard it is to write a Facebook bot? Is it difficult?
It doesn't look that hard.
Yeah.
It looks similar to the Slack bot thing, which is like here's the prompt and here's your response.
And they have an authoring tool. Too.
They've got an authoring tool where you can give it a set of conversations and it will try and extract it for you or something. But I haven't played with that set.
I just saw it this morning for the first time.
This is a bot engine based on wit.ai. Is that what it is?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So Telegram has that too. I have a bot on Telegram and I didn't have to do a lick of code. Hmm. So that makes it very easy to do, you know, stuff that. So the advantage of it is it's push. So, you know, 1,000 people follow my bot on Telegram. I don't know why, but you get a push. When a new show comes out, you get a push. When I arrive at the studio.
You arrived, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that's the point, is it's push, right?
So easy a poet could do it.
So build bots easy. You tell us what your user said. We tell you what your bot should do next. Oh, this is pretty easy. There's no coding here.
Right.
Well, I'm going to have to try it. This is wit.ai, and Facebook acquired them. Oh, I'm definitely making a Leo bot.
Uh-oh.
Oh, this looks good. All right.
So you can attach this to the direct messaging thing, that link, and then people will talk to that.
Well, you know, the Telegram bot gets its content from Twitter. So I have a Twitter bot, and it gets its content from If This Then That and Zapier. And then it tells the Telegram bot what to do. And there's a little latency, but it's not too bad. I have it set up so that in my automatic, which is that OBD2 thing, when I pull up in the vicinity of the studio, the automatic tweets. No, the automatic goes to If This Then That. If This Then That tweets, and then the Twitter gets pulled into the Telegram bot.
It's turtle bots all the way down.
Matt Cutts, so great to see you. What are you up to these days? Are you still on your 30-day challenge? Was it a food challenge?
Always. I had such fun. March was so much fun. March was I'm trying to exercise not just once a day but twice a day.
Oh, wow.
That I decided to double it up and repeat it. So I'm doing the same 30-day challenge back-to-back because winter I didn't get out as much as I wanted, and I'm like, oh, I got to do some cleanup, you know. So it's been going really well.
I thought – oh, I you scared me. I thought you were going to do 4 times a day.
Oh, no.
No.
That's a double up.
Just continue forward in time.
Exponentially doubling.
Yeah. Next time a day.
The next time I'm on the show, I'll just have a treadmill, and I'll just be doing the show on the treadmill nonstop.
So. I've been trying to make this resolution that I will not watch TV unless I'm on the treadmill.
Ooh, oh, come on.
No,
that's a good one.
I think that's really good. Should I do that for 30 days?
Yeah.
Both you, obnoxious people, are going to use that new thing that Google's going to put in your calendar.
We didn't mention that. I find that incredibly annoying.
Yes. Just like you bragging about, you're gonna watch on a treadmill, Leo. Come on.
So what Google's new calendar bot does is looks for free time. You tell it what your goals are. Actually, do I have it or not? Never forget it to do again. No, that's different. That's the reminders thing.
The blog post has some good GIFs.
Okay, good.
People adding stuff to the calendar, so it's sort of you can see you want to work out 3 times a week for an hour in the evening, and then it shows on which is in the rundown. The GIFs show how it'll fit those into slots in your calendar so that you work on important stuff, not just urgent stuff.
Nice. So you tell it kind of what your goals are in life. How often you want to work out. And then it looks, this is what I don't like. It looks for free time in your calendar and it sticks it in there.
That's super cool. Are you guys kidding? This is awesome.
I knew you'd love this, Matt.
It's how much time? I spend like 3 hours a day surfing the web. If I spend an hour on a treadmill while I'm surfing the web, that's a good outcome.
Oh, God. Just when I want my phone to nag me. What happens when you don't do it?
It reschedules it.
God.
Yeah.
It's painful.
Nudge.com.
It's painful. And you can defer, edit, or complete your goals, and then it will choose even better times in the future. It's 2 a.m. Why aren't you running? Run!
Now I know why Matt's doing the double exercise, because he's actually last month's exercise. It moved over to his calendar.
Yeah, that's right. Gotta do a catch-up.
By the way, this is their 10th anniversary widget. They turned 10 on April 12th. Happy birthday, Google Calendar. And I live on Google Calendar. I have never found anything better. It's just fantastic.
Well, you know what? I finally switched over to Inbox because I couldn't use it at first because, of course, of my usual rant about apps accounts. And then I was kind of scared to use it on the show. I got really frightened by it, and I ran away. I love it now.
Oh, good.
I waited too long. It's great.
Inbox is awesome. Yeah.
It's
really nice. Jeff, did you have a number you'd like to share with us?
Yes, I do. Now I have to go to my phone here so I can see it because of my
You can't do it on your Pixel. Here.
My Pixel C. God knows what'll happen. Shush, both of you. Shush. So there's a calculation, take it for what it's worth, that says that crappy ad tech costs iOS users alone $8 billion a year.
Just putting up pop-ups and weird ads and just junk you don't want.
All this, you know, why ad blocking, why the need for AMP, why the need for instant articles. Here you go.
Wow. They say a user who uses ad block in the U.S. on iOS can save $7.19 a month in excess bandwidth fees. Matt, I didn't get to ask you for a tip. I see you have a few in here besides the Google workout.
Yeah. Do you want something that's happy or sad?
Happy, please.
All right. So if you go on a mobile phone and you do a search for something like Europe destinations, it will show you all kinds of cool places you can go. This came out like a few weeks ago, but I don't think we covered, or I didn't hear it covered on
Twig.
No, we didn't. And you can basically select somewhere like Rome, and it will show you places to go and, you know, typical tourist attractions and stuff like that. So it works well with broad queries like Europe destinations or, you know, Canada destinations, that sort of stuff. But it kind of shows you, like, suggested itineraries, 72 hours in Rome, day one, day two, day three. It looks at what a lot of people recommend, Colosseum, Pantheon, and it's really kind of nice. So if you just want to take a trip, you don't know exactly where, this shows you the kinds of places you can go and the sorts of things that a lot of other people do, and even can show you what, you know, trips would cost and all that sort of stuff. So it's a lot of fun to explore.
We had also mentioned on the radio show, Johnny Jett, our travel expert, that Google now allows you to find better deals on flights by choosing one-way flights over round-trip flights. And that's built into that's, I suspect, the ITA technology, as would this be, the ITA, something Google acquired a couple of years ago. And, yeah, it turns out that especially if it's you have a stop, that it's often cheaper to get it one way and then buy the return than it is to buy the round trip. I always thought round trips are cheaper. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice stuff. Thank you, Google. Kevin Marks, got something for us?
Well, a couple of IndieWeb things. There's IndieWeb Cup Nuremberg this weekend. So that's...
Are you going to have a big rally there?
Now.
Oh, dear.
They're going to parade. They're going to parade the geeks are. Yeah.
Well, we put people on trial, you know.
The triumph of the link.
So that's...
Sorry.
That's going on this weekend. And then there's another IndieWeb Cup.
Who writes your material, Leo?
I don't know, but it's I got to talk to Louis C.K. I think I might be able to get a job as a poet.
I think it's more like the Blasio joke.
And then
if you don't like, there's one in Dusseldorf in May.
No, actually, Nuremberg is a wonderful sound. And if you're in Nuremberg or going to Nuremberg, get one of the Nuremberg sausages. And then if you really want to annoy people in Nuremberg, what do you say, Jeff? You say the sausages are so much better in Würzburg, and it'll make them crazy.
They're little tiny sausages. They're Trump size.
They're actually quite good. Trump size for people with baby hands.
Yeah.
And then what's this WebMention Rocks?
So WebMention is the standard we're working on for when a site notifies another site that it's done something, like commented on it or replied or RSVP to something and so on. So WebMention Rocks is a site that Aaron Parecki put up as the WebMention spec is going through the W3C for you to check that you support WebMention properly. So there's a series of pages. So if you link to one of those, test one, test two, click to one of those. The idea is you link to one of those and then WebMention it, and it shows your WebMention there. So you can check to see if you support all these various ways of discovering it.
And I'm sure Known does perfectly in all 8 tests.
It does now. It didn't earlier in the week, which is why we had the tests.
That's why you have the tests. That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
But if you click through, you will see all the responses that people have done to it and which things they've
used. That's cool. It becomes a blog post of its own.
Yes, because it's what WebMentions do. They let you send stuff from one site to another.
There's Bear.
So this is all of us testing it out in different browsers and things. Different indie websites and Known and
perfect,
so on.
Perfect. I shall be testing tonight.
So the thing is, if we're at the state with WebMention now that it's a really good idea to start implementing it because it's about to go through the W3C standards process.
I don't have to do anything to get WebMentions and Known turned on.
No, Known just does it.
Yeah. It just does it.
If you want it in WordPress, you've got to download and install a plugin.
That's the problem. Plugin, right? Yeah, yeah.
And we're working on trying to get that as a default plugin. We're working on trying to get it installed by default in other sites as well. So we should see more of it
soon. The return of the track back.
But we've... but with better presentation.
I hope so.
I hope you're ready for any spam.
Yeah, TrackBack really became a problem, didn't it?
The chatbots.
Yes. Well, yeah, we've got some ideas on that. But yes, we're always ready to listen to your thoughts on it, too.
The difference is, of course, that we now are, you know, prepared for it. I think when, when blogging was first starting, we didn't have these problems.
The innocence.
We were innocent. Now we are not so innocent. We know.
Oh. Schmucks.
Jeff, thank you for sitting your bony ass down there at the beautiful Fort, whatever it is.
Mason.
Thank you. I love Fort Mason.
That's where it is.
He looks like he's in pain. You'll find Jeff at buzzmachine.com. He also is the author of many great books, including Geeks Bearing Gifts, his latest, Gutenberg the Geek, Public Parts, and What Would Google Do? And if you're lucky enough to be going to CUNY, you should go over there to the CUNY School of Journalism and just sit at the foot of the master. Your students are lucky, lucky people. Thank you, Jeff, for being here. Next week, are you going to be here or you're not? You're in Germany next week, right?
I'm in Germany, but I'm going to hope to, so just be safe for...
we'll have an extra person, as we did this week, just in case.
Dan Lyons and Danny Sullivan are next week.
Oh, fun. Oh, we're going to get the inside scoop on HubSpot.
Good. Good.
Dan Lyons. Yeah,
I saw Danny. He said, I'll be on next week.
And Sullivan, we love. We can ask him about sending flowers to Zuck. that'll be fun. That's next week. Thank you so much for being here, too. Matt Cutts, always a thrill. We love having you on. You're just welcome anytime you want.
Thanks for having me.
One of the nicest guys
great to have you here.
In technology. It's just really great to see you. And, of course, Kevin Marks, who is the king of the indie web. He's bringing the web back to the way it used to be.
I'm not going to say the king. He's one of the citizens of the indie web.
Citizen.
We don't have kings.
He's a citizen king.
No. You are the mayor of the indie web.
Yes. He's the ruler.
He's
the ruler
first
of the
among
web.
Equals in the indie web.
No, there's a lot of us working on this.
No, and thank goodness, because I think the open web is such a beautiful and elegant and wonderful and important thing. We want to keep it alive. For all the wonderful things Facebook brings us, it's not the open web. The open web rocks. I'm sure we all agree on that. Thanks, Kevin. It's great to see you.
Good to see you.
We do This Week in Google, which really we got to call, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs or something. We got to change the name up a little bit because it's about the cloud. It's about everything going on in the internet today. We do it every Wednesday at about 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. That's 20:30 UTC. If you want to watch live or be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv, we'd love having you. If you can't watch live on-demand audio and video of all of our shows, is available at our website. For this show, it's twit.tv/twig. You'll also find it on YouTube. Just go to youtube.com/twit for a directory of all of our shows on YouTube. And subscribe. We've got podcasts, podcatchers all over the place. There's wonderful Twit apps on every platform. Find your favorite app, subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.